sorry if the show is a little lower quality than normal, but we'll try our best to make it all work. One of the first things I like to be sure and mention, just in case you're not familiar or unaware, might be your first time listening, there is shows done live. At least it's done live. As long as quarantine's going on, this show will probably be live. But the big thing is that, well, we chat during the show, and you can join in. All you have to do is SSH over to sdf.org, which is what also powers anonradio.net, and from there, just go ahead and type com, and then from com, you press G for go to, and then you type anonradio, all lowercase, and from there you'll go into anonradio, and you'll get to see all the people that are in there and all the chats going on. You just press space to enter chat mode. Away you go. Press H to talk. Exiled and Plebe and Ratsu and Handy C and all sorts of people are in here. So, we'll have a good time. Metacue's in here, it looks like. So, howdy howdy, everyone. So, Exiled. Alright. So, let's go ahead and run through it. The news isn't as organized as I usually like to have it, but we can still start the way we always start.
World news.
Fire up the news blender. Pull out some world news first. First up, this is traumatic. So definitely don't look at this picture. But the famine in Yemen is still going on, and they found the worst case they found of somebody still holding on to life. This poor child was paralyzed and severely malnourished. 7-year-old Faid Samim lies curled up on a hospital bed in the Yemeni capital of Sana'a, having barely survived the journey. So, Faid weighs only 7 kilograms. He's a 7-year-old. He weighs 7 kilograms. And his tiny, fragile frame takes up barely a quarter of the folded hospital blanket. His family had to travel from Al-Jawaf, 170 kilometers north of Sana'a, through checkpoints and damaged roads to get him there. Unable to afford his medication or treatment, the family relies on donations to get him treated, Mohammed says malnutrition cases are on the rise, and impoverished parents are forced to rely on the kindness of strangers or international aid to get their children treated. Famine has never been officially declared in Yemen, where a 6-year war has left 80% of the population relying on aid, and what the UN says is the world's largest humanitarian crisis. Welcome, One Vault. UN warnings in late 2018 of impending famine prompted an aid ramp-up, but coronavirus restrictions, reduced remittance, locusts, floods, and significant underfunding of the 2020 aid response are exacerbating hunger. The war in Yemen, in which Saudi-led coalition has been battling the Iranian Houthi movement since 2015, has killed more than 100,000 people and left the country divided, with the Houthis holding Sana'a and most major urban centers. So, very tragic indeed. Yeah, it's amazing. I had no idea that a 7-year-old could be 7 kilograms and be alive. That's crazy. Keeping up with our international news, Julian Assange extradition has been blocked. The judge blocked the request because of concerns over Mr. Assange's mental health and the risks of suicide in the U.S. Mr. Assange, who was wanted over the publication of thousands of classified documents in 2010 and 2011, says the case is politically motivated. Expressing disappointment at the ruling, the U.S. Justice Department noted that its legal arguments had prevailed. Its position is that the leaks broke the law and endangered lives. While we are extremely disappointed in the court's ultimate decision, we are gratified that the United States prevailed on every point of law raised, the Justice Department says. The U.S. authorities have 14 days in which to lodge an appeal and are expected to do so. The interesting piece, or one of the things I thought was interesting in this, was that they don't have photos of it, but they did have a drawing, and they show a drawing of a court sketch of Mr. Assange sitting there listening, but he's wearing his mask in the typical boomer style, where the mask is below the nose but covers the mouth. in the courtroom, and then the person sketched lightly behind him has his mask completely on. So it's very interesting. I wonder if he's an anti-mask person. Anyway, District Judge Vanessa Barrister ruled that while the U.S. prosecutors had met the test for Mr. Assange to be extradited for trial, the U.S. was incapable of preventing him from attempting to take his own life. Outlining evidence of his self-harm and suicidal thought, she said, "The overall impression is of a depressed and sometimes despairing man, fearful for his future." She said, "Faced with the conditions of near total isolation without the protective factors which limited his risk at HMP Belmarsh, I am satisfied the procedures described by the U.S. will not prevent Mr. Assange from finding a way to commit suicide, and for this reason I have decided extradition would be oppressive by reason of mental harm, and I order his discharge." Mr. Assange, who wore a blue suit and green face mask in the dock, closed his eyes as the judge ruled out her ruling on Monday. His fiancée, Stella Morris, with whom he has two young sons, wept and was comforted by WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Kristen Hranfersen, who sat next to her in court. And that last name is this one. I call it boomer-style exiled because, this is a chat, but the way he was wearing his mask, I call that boomer-style just because that's how I see most boomers and older people wearing their masks if I go to like the grocery store, or if I like am driving somewhere, I see those guys like that. Basically Assange is going to be he's not going to be extradited because the U.S. can't guarantee that his safety. So, which will be interesting. The article doesn't really say, is he going to be free, like just walking around? I don't know. Let's see. Yeah, the BBC doesn't really say, so that's just what I'm going to go with. Let's keep on moving. WikiLeaks, while it's not as important as it used to be, I think it's really, really a good thing, and it's important because it kind of opened up a way for whistleblowers to kind of give that anonymous output. All right, coming to us from The Guardian, Iran has seized South Korean tankers as tensions with U.S. mount. And Iran's Revolutionary Guards have seized a South Korean vessel for polluting the Persian Gulf with chemicals, amid rising tension between Iran and the U.S. during the final days of Trump's presidency. Iranian news agencies published photos showing Revolutionary Guards speedboats escorting the tanker MT Hankuk Kimi, and said the vessel's crew members, including nationals of South Korea, Indonesia, Vietnam, and Myanmar, had been detained. The tanker is being held at Iran's Bandar Abbas port city. South Korea's foreign ministry demanded the vessel's immediate release and said South Korean forces stationed in the Strait of Hormuz had been dispatched to the area. The incident came before an expected visit to Tehran by South Korea's deputy foreign minister and against the backdrop of rising tensions between Iran and the Trump administration. Bank robber style. That's an interesting approach. On Monday, Iran resumed enriching. So today, it began enriching uranium up to 20%, a significant breach of the 2015 nuclear accord, reducing the time it would take to reach weapons grade level. The move, which Iran notified the UN nuclear watchdog about last week, was one of many mentioned in a law passed by Iran's parliament last month in response to the killing of the country's top nuclear scientist, which Tehran has blamed on Israel. Iran started violating the accord in 2019 in retaliation for Washington's withdrawal from the agreement and the reimposition of U.S. sanctions against Tehran. The enrichment is taking place at the Fordow site, which was built inside a mountain, apparently to protect it from aerial bombardment. The 2015 deal does not allow enrichment there. So yeah, basically, most of the Western world is shitting on Iran, and so now they've seized a tanker that was passing by. So, good luck. We'll see what happens there. We can only hope for peace. And speaking of kind of sadness, but not war, Niger declares national mourning and security boost after attacks. Niger on Monday declared 3 days of mourning and vowed to beef up security in a western border region where jihadists killed 100 villagers. We have decreed 3 days of national mourning, and on security we are going to strengthen the presence in the frontier region with Mali Interior Minister Alkache Alhada told AFP, adding that the government would also launch forums to diffuse ethnic tension. Scores of terrorists arriving by motorbike killed 70 people in the village of Chomba Bango. And that's got a bunch of consonants, so I'm going to put it in COM 2. And 30 in Zeru Madre, local mayor Almoy Hassan told AFP on Sunday, it was the biggest single massacre of civilians in the Sahel's 8-year-old history of Islamist unrest, according to a U.S. group ACLED, it's Alpha Charlie Lima Echo Delta, which tracks the violence. Ahada, speaking by phone after a meeting of the National Security Council, said troop numbers would be increased to achieve greater saturation of the area. So we'll see what happens there. Niger is caught in a pincer between jihadists crossing from Mali in its southwest and from Nigeria in its southeast. Oh, I see. So when I think of Niger, I think of like an Ohio-shaped state or country, but it has a little peninsula that goes off a little bit. That's south of Mali, and so there's a chunk of Niger that's basically in between these two warring factions. So that's what's causing the trouble, or that's where the trouble's happening. And from France 24, Egypt rapper suspended over selfies with Israelis reinstated. So, Egyptian rapper and actor Mohammed Ramadan blocked from work after the publication in November of photos of him posing with Israeli celebrities is back on the job, he said Monday. The actor published a picture on his Facebook page of himself on the set of a series titled Musa, slated to air during the Muslim holy fasting Ramadan later this year. An Egyptian court on Saturday dismissed a case against Ramadan. Oh. His surname is Ramadan. And Ramadan is also the holy month in Islam. So what they're saying is an Egyptian court on Saturday dismissed a case against the person Ramadan that aimed at preventing him from acting and singing in Egypt. The syndicate of Egyptian artists in December lifted a ban imposed on Ramadan, the person, after suspending his membership in November. And the Union of Journalists also decided to rescind a decision to boycott all news linked to Ramadan due to the controversial photos. In November, Israeli official Arab language social media accounts posted two undated photos of Ramadan alongside singer Omar Adam and footballer Dia Sabah, both Israeli citizens, on a rooftop in Dubai. So, drama there, but that's how it goes. Alrighty. This is more peaceful news, another good peaceful news. Saudi Arabia, Qatar, agree to open airspace, land, and sea border. The Kuwait Foreign Ministry announces Saudi Arabia would open its airspace, land, and sea border starting Monday evening. The state-run Kuwait news agency reported the announcement saying Saudi Arabia would open its airspace, land, and sea border starting Monday evening. In June 2017, the blockading countries, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain and Egypt accused Qatar, among other things, of supporting terrorism and being too close to Iran and severed economic and diplomatic ties. The four countries imposed a land, sea, and air blockade on Qatar. Qatar has repeatedly denied allegations and said there is no legitimate justification for the severance of relations. Kuwait's been mediating between Qatar and four Arab states. This is very significant in the sense that it is paving the way to the announcement, Al Jazeera's Jamal al-Shayala said. One of the preconditions the Qataris had was that it made no sense to discuss or sign an agreement as long as it remained under an unjust and illegal blockade. Last month, the Gulf Cooperation Council said Qatar's... Oh, that's funny. Their abbreviation is GCC. Said Qatar's emir was invited to the bloc summit meeting next week in Saudi Arabia amid efforts to heal the rifts. So this will be very interesting news. It continues to grow. We'll find out more about it. I don't know. Ramadan the person, I don't know if he's on the Fediverse, but I do know that there's a lot of people that celebrate Ramadan that are in the Fediverse, if that makes sense. yeah. yeah, like GCC, but it's the Gulf something, Cooperative Consortium or something like that. I closed the tab already. So let's see, we've got, New York and cool. All right. It's time to play a song and then Qatari Warriors activate. We're going to play a song real quick and then we're going to get into a couple of tech news stories and some US stories. We've got about 13 minutes or so to go. So stick around.
All my bags are packed and ready to go. I'm standing here outside the door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye. But the dawn is breaking, it's early morning. Taxi's waiting. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. 'Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane. Don't know when I'll be back again. Oh babe, I hate to go. So many times I let you down. There's so many times I fucked around. I tell you now,
SDF Public Access Unix System.
Yeah, that's right. This is Anon Radio. Thank you for tuning in. This is news to me. I'm DJ Marcus, and it is 19:19 UTC. So Tobe's coming up with the Dubious Goals Committee at 19:30, and today's Monday, I think. If it's Monday, that means that it's Harry Larry's after Tobe. You can check out the schedule and all of that kind of cool stuff at anonradio.net. So check it out. So, boom, it's time.
Is it time for tech news?
We got a couple tech stories. I'm kind of excited about that. First up, Slack, the proprietary closed source super popular chat program, had another outage. Slack Technologies, Inc. said its workplace messaging service was hit by an outage on Monday, disrupting remote work as people returned from the holidays. The company said it was investigating the connection issues affecting users and would continue to share updates every 30 minutes until the incident has been downgraded. More than 15,000 users had initially reported issues. Currently, over 4,000 users are still facing issues. Down Detector, which is the public-facing website, only tracks outages by collating status reports from a series of sources, including user-submitted errors on its platform. The outage might be affecting a larger number of users. And, of course, definitely would. I know that I know that Enterprise Slack is interesting because you host your chat part of it, but certain features just stop working whenever other stuff happens, so... Be sure, if you are sticking around for the Dubious Goals Committee, you put on your magnet boots. Gravity has been acting a little strange lately, so you want to stay firmly planted while you're listening. So the messaging app has added more than 20,000 paid customers in the last two quarters, bringing its total number of paid customers to over 142,000. These are individuals, not the corporate ones that have, you know, millions of users or whatever. So pretty rad. Okay, what's the other one? Well, this is one that I'm super excited about. Google employees have formed a labor union in the United States. What? Class consciousness is on its way up. Watch out. More than 200 employees and contractors at Google parent Alphabet Inc. in the United States and Canada have formed a labor union to promote workplace equity and ethical business practices, the group's elected leaders said on Monday. The Alphabet Workers Union will collect dues of 1% of total compensation from members. Wow, they get paid well too, so that'll be a good bunch. According to its website, the funds will cover paid organizers, events, legal support, and wages for members in the event of a labor strike. The group's formation builds on unprecedented protests by Google workers in recent years, while the tech industry has seen minimal union activity and worker pushback. Historically, thousands of people at Alphabet had banded together to publicly criticize Google's handling of sexual harassment complaints, its work with the U.S. military, and other issues. Unlike many budding unions, the newly formed group does not expect to collectively bargain with Alphabet over pay and working conditions anytime soon. Instead, it aims to create a more formal structure to organize future protests. Our union will work to ensure that workers know what they're working on and can do their work at a fair wage, without fear of abuse, retaliation, or discrimination. Google engineers Paul Kuhl, that's a great name for somebody, and Chewy Shaw wrote in a New York Times opinion piece on Monday announcing the union. Kuhl is the executive chair of the Alphabet Workers Union and Shaw vice chair. Kara Silverstein, director of people operations at Google, said on Monday, "Our employees have protected labor rights that we support, but as we've always done, we'll continue engaging directly with all of our employees." So, yeah, basically, no, sorry, Winavaults, it is not. Google's been under fire here from the U.S. labor regulator, which has accused the company of unlawfully questioning several workers who were then terminated for protesting company's policies and trying to organize a union. Google said it was confident it acted legally. Alphabet Worker Union members will be part of the Communication Workers of America Local 1400, which also includes employees from Verizon Communications and AT&T. So yeah, it's pretty wild. I used to have a paid Otter AI. There's a question in Com if there's a text version of an on radio. And I used to have an Otter AI account, but it's $10 a month. And that was, it wasn't useful because the only unless you want to pay for transcription service, it's the auto transcription for people who have an accent, like even like my accent. It's pretty bad, or it's not worth it. It takes like hours and hours to fix it up. Yeah, that's what Otter AI does. It's like a text to speech thing. I used to upload podcasts to it, and then when you upload podcasts, then it would just sort out the speakers and the text, and then you would just have to go through and fix all the transcription errors. It was kind of cool, but after an hour or two of it, it just was like not worth it. Oh yeah. but anyway, every DJ on and on radio does get a WordPress account, like page where they can post updates and make posts to. I could start posting the links to the news story there. I did that for a little while, but no one really ever clicked on any of the links, so that's why I stopped doing it. So if you want that, just let me know. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I can do that, if that's what you're trying to get. That's something I would be able to do. I could start doing that tomorrow. I just don't have it today. Yeah, because I didn't make my bookmark for today. So as I close the tabs, they're gone forever. I don't have them in a sorted list or anything. New York and Florida, this is our next to last story. New York and Florida tell hospitals to dispense COVID-19 vaccines quicker or lose supply. New York State will begin fining hospitals that do not administer allotted COVID-19 vaccines within a week of receiving their supplies and will decline to provide them with further doses, Governor Andrew Cuomo said in a news conference on Monday. The U.S. federal government has distributed more than 13 million vaccine doses to states and territories around the country, but only around 4 million have actually been administered, according to data for the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, last updated on Saturday. New York Health Commissioner Dr. Howard Zucker notified hospitals of the potential actions in a letter on Sunday, Cuomo told reporters. I don't want the vaccine in a fridge or a freezer. I want it in somebody's arm, he said. If you're not performing this function, it does raise questions about the operating efficiency of the hospital. In Florida, where officials have put senior citizens ahead of many essential workers for getting the vaccine, Governor Ron DeSantis announced a policy under which the state would allocate doses to hospitals that dispense them most quickly. Hospitals that do not have a good job of getting the vaccine out will have their allocations transferred to hospitals that are doing a good job at getting the vaccine out. We do not want vaccine to just be idle at some hospital system, he added, although he did not say they would face fines. Florida will also deploy an additional 1,000 nurses to administer vaccines and will keep state-run vaccination sites open 7 days a week, he said. Doses. Doses. The way I say doses is apparently funny. But yeah, it's very sad indeed. One of the things that is going on that's kind of important to note too is that early in this problem, hospital workers would go to the hot spots, but now the whole country is a hot spot, and there are severe shortages of nurses and healthcare workers in Texas, California, North Dakota, and in Florida. So there's probably not going to be many nurses left, and a lot of them are burning out, so please stay safe. Last story. Auto worker crushed to death at Marion Stampin plant in Indiana. Yeah, we'll end on a high note here, or a low note, flat note. Last Wednesday morning, an incident interrupted production at the General Motors stamping plant in the small town of Marion, about 60 miles northeast of Indianapolis, likely haunt the workers who witnessed it for the rest of their lives. The plant formed sheet metal body parts to supply the Fort Wayne assembly plant, which manufactures Chevy and GMC full-size pickup trucks, as well as shipping to truck assembly plants in Michigan, Texas, Kansas, and other states. Productions and shipping schedules require the Marion plant to store between 1 and 2 days of buffer product. They use 4-inch by 4-inch horizontal steel tubing welded into movable wall sections that span from the factory floor to the roof structure 20 feet overhead to separate storage racks loaded with body parts from other areas in the plant where workers are engaged in production. Since 2007, the company, with the complicity of the UAW, has outsourced janitorial and machine cleaning services to replace GM workers who previously did that work. On Wednesday, the contractor Caravan was using at least one giant fork truck to move a sheet steel wall section that is 40 feet long by 20 feet high and weighs approximately 7,000 pounds. When a malfunction caused the wall to crash to the floor slab, crushing an electrician who was working in the vicinity. His name was Mark McKnight, a highly skilled and careful worker who is 57 years old. Everyone liked him, a coworker said, the nicest guy you could ever meet. The plant was opened in November 1956, 1970. Oh, we're out of time. Enjoy. See you, Harry Larry. Howdy, everybody. Sorry if I missed you and Tom. I'll talk to you tomorrow, and I'll make sure to have the links.
Well, that sound means that our time has come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
All right, the time.